Welcome to Accounting High.
So the RC, I thought RC Cola when I first saw it, but stands for reasonable comp. Our solution was a spreadsheet that had a two-thirds calculator, and we type in how much they made, and we roughly calculate two-thirds. We think two-thirds is reasonable. What does the IRS think about that?
So two-thirds would be kind of referring to some rules of thumb that came out of a giant void of information and education on this in the 2000s, when nobody had any clear direction on how to calculate reasonable compensation. Two or three myths or rules of thumb came out of that time frame, and they're still floating around today. One is,
may I have your attention, please? I repeat, may I have your attention, please?
This is another public service announcement brought to you in part
by Accounting High.
The views and events expressed here are
of the next generation of accounting and tech professionals leading this space.
Welcome to Accounting High. Whether you loved high school or you hated it, here we're on a mission to set our own traditions. Here's your chance to be a part of an unforgettable experience redone. So sit back, relax, and open your mind because class is in session.
Anything else?
Yeah.
So without further ado, introducing the star of our show,
Scotty and Paul.
We're going to have a problem here.
Hey, yo, Paul. It's when you get this message.
Class is in session. I've got Paul on the line with me. Paul Hammond of RCR Reports. Paul, thank you for joining our students today.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me on. I've been looking forward to this.
This is Tech Time today. We're recording this today with in mind, we're going to talk about tech, but we're also going to talk about reasonable comp and how those two might be related. You may not think so, but you also may not think your clients might be better off not being a CEO. And we'll figure out how to answer that question. Your clients may be better off tax-wise by not being a CEO, and Paul's here to tell us why. Paul, thank you.
Yeah, of course.
So, tell me, how did you get started into this accounting tech space?
It started in the late 2000s. I was spending most of my time and career in executive search and compensation. I think it was 08, 09, somewhere in that time frame, I got pulled into a project, a very specialized project called Reasonable Compensation. And that led to a series of frustrations and some other challenges because I was tasked to figuring out what reasonable compensation would be for an S corp. And it was incredibly difficult and challenging. It took 2 to 3 days, and I would typically charge for a study probably somewhere between $2,000 and $3,000. The frustration was that at the end of that time frame, not only was it expensive for the accountant or the S corp owner who commissioned the project, but the data and some of the conclusions were not well supported. So I have a very entrepreneurial mindset, and I began looking into this, and that was really the inception for RC Reports.
Let's kind of back up to the actual code of the IRS and what you're trying to back up, because what is reasonable comp for our listeners that do taxes? For me, for our firm, you know, I don't really think I have a clear definition of what is reasonable comp. Can you answer that?
Absolutely. I'm going to share two definitions with you. The actual IRS definition: reasonable compensation is the value that would ordinarily be paid for like services by like enterprises under like circumstances. For most accountants, that's going to be fairly clear, I think, but to when you're explaining it to your clients, that's not a great way to explain it to them. Typically, what I suggest is...
Can I tell you what we say?
Sure.
So we tell our clients, what would you pay somebody else to do what you do as it is now? So it's very hard to define for an owner because the owner could be doing many different things. So we have to get them to compartmentalize. If you replaced this aspect of your role and this aspect of your role, all of those things are you're going to pay somebody else to do. What would you pay them? That's reasonable.
Yep, you are spot on. We just refer to that as your replacement cost for all the different services you provide.
Right. And it's hard, though, because of the fact that owners tend to take a lot on their plate. So they may be doing a lot of different things that they wouldn't be able to quantify. So myself, in particular, I have got myself out of almost every aspect of the firm. Do I even need to pay myself a salary? And that's typically what a client would ask. And the way I could answer it is there anything else that they need to replace you with, or is it fully operational without you? And if it's fully operational without them and they're not needed for anything, do they need to take a salary?
Oh, the answer at that point in time would be no, because they're no longer a shareholder employee. They've just moved into the category of shareholder.
Okay, good, because I don't take a salary for anybody that's listening. But I've had some pushback. I've mentioned this. I've talked about this in different circles, and people have told me that I still need to take a salary being the sole owner. I don't know if that's the case, but I'm not going to quote this during an audit or anything if I do get audited for not taking a salary. My wife is also part owner, and she still gets a salary, although she doesn't do anything for that salary in the business. She still gets it being part owner, and sort of like, I don't know, the way we structure it, it's sort of like an allowance. I don't know what you want to call it, but is that even right? And that's, she's also an S Corp owner. She still gets a K-1 and everything.
Yeah. So the way the IRS defines who's responsible or who is required to take reasonable compensation is if you perform services for the S Corp. No services, it's not required. So it doesn't sound like from what you shared with me that either one of you would be required.
Okay. So if performing services, so then tell me how did this lead to you trying to find a solution to this? Because our solution was a spreadsheet that had a two-thirds calculator, and we type in how much they made and we roughly calculate two-thirds. Because if we can't clearly define everything that that owner's doing, and they're doing a lot of different things, we think two-thirds is reasonable. What does the IRS think about that?
So two-thirds would be kind of referring to some rules of thumb that came out of a giant void of information and education on this in the 2000s. When nobody had any clear direction on how to calculate reasonable compensation, two or three myths or rules of thumb came out of that time frame, and they're still floating around today. One is what we call the 50-50, which is splitting reasonable compensation and distributions 50-50. One is taking the Social Security max, which is the safe harbor. And then another one is setting reasonable comp as an approximation of like sales or net revenue.
Like a commission type thing.
Yeah, exactly. So all three of those were pretty common, but all three of those are not recognized by the IRS. Really what they're looking for is comparability data. If you had to go out and replace yourself in your company, what would you have to hire that person? And so most of that direction comes to us through the courts. So the IRS says they want this, but then we look to the courts to see how. And so we see that in a number of court cases, which is that comparability data.
So they're basically just looking at job comps for that role. And okay. I mean, because that's also, in all fairness, that's kind of what we do for a lot of things in our profession. We kind of look at last year or look at how things have been done in the past and trying to model off of that. And that's fair enough as far as reasonable comp. So tell me, how did you go out to solve that problem?
So
you can
Google
to find out what everybody's making, right? Like, I interrupted, but
No, you're spot on. I was going to say the first thing I did back in the 2000s is I Googled it. You know, what should a business owner be paid, or an S Corp owner? There weren't any real clear answers. There were some of these rules of thumb that I just shared with you, but no real clear answer, which is why when I started doing these studies on my own, I would interview a business owner and I would literally break down all the things they do, all the different hats they would wear, and apportion that time off, find comp, build that compensation study back together by blending and adding all those jobs back together. And that's what I was doing in the early days, but it was incredibly expensive and time consuming. There wasn't anybody who was just kind of offering that. And if you simply Google, what does a business owner make? Good luck. There is really no number out there because every business owner is different.
Yeah. I mean, but it's still a huge area of, I guess, concern for a lot of tax preparers, a lot of small business people who serve the small business market. The S Corp was like the selling point in a lot of these. I've seen people sign up for new accountants because they claim they're going to save them a lot of money by becoming an S Corp. And they take all their clients that are making roughly like not even $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 and turning them all into S Corps. Sometimes I saw that as an irresponsible way for them to make more money, and the client isn't even saving that much after they pay the client, the accountant to handle all the payroll stuff. So that was something that we would see a lot with new clients coming aboard. I mean, in a lot of cases, we even did that as a selling point in a lot of ways, because somebody would come to us and they're not an S Corp and we think, wow, they could save a ton of money. They're making upwards of $400,000-$500,000 a year. We can make them an S Corp. We could save them a handful. We can save them some money there in that SE tax. So there's, I guess, I never really saw this as an IRS, like people weren't scared of the IRS auditing reasonable comp. So why go into this and why try to solve this one problem when it's not rampant? Like, well, I'm not seeing all kinds of reasonable comp audits at all. And that was something that we talked about when I first met you. Like, what's the draw here for somebody to want to tighten up all of their clients' reasonable compensation if they're not nobody's getting audited?
Right. So the IRS attention to this issue has definitely been a roller coaster. It's had its ups or downs. The reason I got into it in the late 2000s is they had a huge initiative back then. They set up a compliance initiative project. And so I was pulled in because people were getting hit with reasonable comp challenges. Okay. When the IRS started losing its funding, having some PR problems, that peak ended and it dove down and we didn't see as many reasonable comp challenges. That trend is reversed. Starting in about 2018, 2019, it's been on the increase again. What's interesting is that if you haven't seen any, you're not typically worried about them. But if you have seen them, or you know people that have, they're incredibly expensive and time-consuming. And one of the phrases you'll hear me say is, nobody ever gets hit by the bus they see coming. That's what everybody says until they have a reasonable compensation challenge, right? And I've never had one until you do.
You don't see the bus coming. So tell me, what makes these reasonable comp audits so expensive and time consuming?
So in a typical scenario, the business owner won't have any kind of backup or clarification as to how he came up with his reasonable comp figure, or he used a rule of thumb such as 50-50. So the examiner may ask about reasonable compensation from a few different directions. It could be straight on, this is a reasonable compensation challenge. How did you come up with $24,000, right? It's $2,000 a month, my accountant suggested it. Okay, the examiner is going to go back to having a general idea of maybe what you do for your company. No surprise, that number typically comes in somewhere near the Social Security maximum, just what I've seen. And so now you're looking at having distributions between those two amounts recharacterized as wages. So you're paying taxes, penalty, and interest on that amount. And that's generally about 2.5 times whatever the original tax on that amount would be.
Because of the penalties, because of the late amendment, all that. Oh, wow. Yep. Okay. Yeah, I've seen this happen on a state level. Typically, it's workers' compensation audits. And they will poke their nose into the federal and they will say, well, this is not reasonable. I've had that happen twice. And they say they're going to send a letter in to the IRS, or they say they're going to send something to notify it, or they're going to keep an eye on it. But really, there's not much that they can do on that state level. And I could only imagine on a federal level how this could impact the accounting firm that told their client to take this salary, and then the auditor decides to turn on to the firm and say, well, did you do this to all your other clients too? Have you seen that happen?
Yeah, absolutely. I have seen it happen with a number of our subscribers, but Eric Green talks about this in a blog article he does for us and in a short webinar segment he does for this, where the accountant had been practicing for 40 years, talking about never having a problem with it until he did. They looked at one of his clients, realized he was severely out of compliance, then looked at his book of business and plowed their way through 13 clients in all. So he had this issue going on with 13 clients for a 2-year period. So each client, that's twice. And a lot of accountants don't realize they have skin in the game. The IRS has assessed preparer penalties on this subject. In this scenario for Eric Green's client, and this is why Eric Green was involved, he was helping the accountant out of this, ended up with $130,000 in preparer penalties for those 13 clients.
So about $10,000 per client.
Yeah. So it was $5,000 for each year. So 2 years for each of the clients.
And that can't be good for business overall, no. Too. If the clients talk to each other, or just even that's not a good look.
No.
That right there should be reason enough for you to consider that. The practice of suggesting a reasonable comp too is a big responsibility. If you're not suggesting it to your clients, then you may not be as at risk. But how does the IRS determine if you are suggesting that or not, just based on their word?
In that particular scenario, the accountant had said, hey, look, I think you need to pay yourself more reasonable compensation than you are, thinking that covered himself when the client declined. What it really did was show that he knew the client wasn't taking enough reasonable compensation and still signed off on that tax return.
Oh, so you would have to effectively drop a client if they didn't fix this, because we've definitely seen that.
That is Eric Green's suggestion, and my suggestion is evaluate your risk tolerance. It's your clients. I don't know what your relationships are with them, but know that you do have risk in addition to them.
Interesting. Okay. I know we've definitely come across that scenario in so many other ways too, and it's always a difficult situation. Risk tolerance, that's what it comes down to.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Cool. So what are some ways that, at least like, that you set out to solve this problem still? Like, what does it do to help prevent this or solve this?
A few things that you've already touched on. One, we are an independent voice, and we have a very, very good reputation and track record with the IRS. And what I mean by that is when the IRS sees one of our reports, they've seen a lot of these over the 10 years we've been in business. And so they know we're not trying to drive a number up or down. We're trying to give you that replacement cost figure. So effectively, as the tax advisor, you're not suggesting the number, right? You're suggesting a solution, which is RC reports, but our report is what is that independent third-party voice to that figure. And when we developed RC reports, we developed what we called the multiple hats approach, which is taking all the different hats the business owner wears and then separating them out and building it into a single reasonable compensation figure. It was really fun to see a couple of years later the IRS kind of memorialize that approach. That's one of three approaches that the IRS will typically use in their internal job aid, called the cost approach, which is what we also call it now. It's kind of the universal language for kind of that multiple hats approach.
Do they suggest a subject that's being audited use this? Like, is this one of those things in their toolkit to say, here's a resource to use to determine?
You're talking about the examiners?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We've had examiners. I can think of a couple of instances in Florida where the examiners actually said, look, you guys go take a look at this. And typically what happens in a reactive scenario is we're the voice of reason, right? The business owner's way over here. The IRS is way over here. We're trying to bring people into some kind of a number where both sides can come to an agreement. Proactively, to our knowledge, we've had zero issues. If you do this proactively and put it in your files, you've basically done what the IRS has asked you to do.
Yeah. So this reminds me of Biz Equity, which is a tool for valuations as that third party where you can key in all the data of the business, and then it gives you some unbiased valuation of the company. That's sort of what this is that intermediary where the accountant could use this tool with the client and show this to them. This is what you should be taking. And then they could rely on that too for their records. Save it. Boom. And what is it that you're doing? What is RCR reports doing that the accountant can't just do on Google?
I would say probably the biggest two reasons to use RC reports versus Google. One, our wage database is exclusive. So it is about 2.5 times larger than what you're going to find no matter how much Googling you do. It's exclusive to us. The second, and I have many people who said I used to do this on a spreadsheet all the time. It would take me a minimum of 3 to 4 hours. It can take as long as a day or two if you're trying to find the information. And sometimes that information isn't even available. It's time. What is your time worth? When you can do this in 5 to 15 minutes versus, let's just say you can do it in 4 hours and not 2 days, still a massive time savings. And if we do it, we're the independent third party. If you're doing it, you're saying, hey, I own this number. I came up with it.
Well, that's it right there. It's the time savings for somebody that wants to do it themselves versus using a tool. And I think that goes without saying for everything that we do. you could save a lot of time with tools and with tech and with other things, or you could do it yourself and be spending hours and hours at the office, more hours than you should be when you could be spending that at home. And what other types of use cases? So the RC, I thought RC Cola when I first saw it, but stands for reasonable comp, right? These are reasonable comp reports. Are there any other consultative opportunities for an accountant that's using this?
Absolutely. You are now in my favorite part of any conversation about reasonable compensation. We are there if you get in trouble reactively. That's really where we came from inception-wise. Proactively, we want to help you get your clients squared away. But when it comes to planning or talking with clients, when you said you'd have a client come in and you'd be talking with them about maybe moving to an S-Corp, it's my favorite advisory topic. We actually have a tool built into our software. We call it ESP. It's just our entity selection planner. And you can, once you know reasonable comp, you can take that planner and run it through and show your client whether it makes sense for them to move over to an S-Corp or not. And we'll also do a projection up to 10 years out.
Oh, dope. So it's sort of like our little tax calculator that we have in our spreadsheet. It's similar to that, and it's sort of can be used as a selling tool.
Absolutely built for that. And it has a number of different inputs that you can take advantage of. So if you want to suggest adding payroll services or bookkeeping services or even charge for the analysis, all of that's built in there. So when you show it to your client, they're seeing the total savings, right? But also
after
built in there.
Fees, after yeah, whatever after else you're going to include in there, which is another thing that we try to do as well. That's so cool. All right. So then it turns into a proactive measure that you could use even initially when taking on clients during a sales process or even after you've taken them on and during an initial consultative session with a CPA, which we do. We'll take a client on and then we'll have the CPA look at it with them to see if they're going to benefit. This is a tool that the CPA could use during that session to show them the results, the reports.
Yeah, absolutely. It produces a really nice deliverable. A lot of our subscribers use it on what they call intake. Have a session with an advisor, whatever that is. But, you know, maybe you charge for it, maybe you don't. It depends kind of where you are and bringing that client in.
Well, you should be charging for everything. So, and if you're using a tool like this, you can charge for it because it looks a lot more professional. And it looks like, you know, there's a little bit more. So how does this connect to all the other tools that we're using? So do we have to manually key everything in, or is it pulling data in from UltraTax or the other tax platforms? What's the inputs here?
So the inputs are fairly minor, actually. So for the accountant, it's typically just your client's name and business name and their industry. And we have some other inputs that are optional if you want in there. But from that point forward, you can actually have your clients fill in the interview, right? They know what they're doing. They know what hats they're wearing for their business. So they can run through that interview. When that interview is done, RC Reports lets the accountant know. The accountant can pop in there, take a look. Great place to show value. You know how many small business owners select their CEO of their company? And when it's pointed out that a CEO does some pretty high-level things and is one of the highest paid tasks in our database, it's why your client isn't necessarily a CEO.
So that's why I should stop calling myself a CEO. Is that right?
No, absolutely not. You should absolutely continue calling yourself a CEO, but that's different than being one or paying yourself as one for sure.
No, I get it.
And that's,
So for the forms, typically we write like president or founder or a lot of that stuff just for the owner. We don't usually write CEO. That doesn't come up. But if it does the IRS take that into play? Is that what sort of the answer to the question that I hinted at? Why your clients might be better off tax-wise not being a CEO?
Yeah. So for instance, a CEO may be $200, $300, even $400 an hour, where a business office manager, which might fit a whole lot better when you look at the actual descriptions, might be $30 an hour. And if your goal is to have your reasonable compensation be toward the lower end of the spectrum than the higher, it's going to be an incredibly big difference in how our reasonable compensation report comes out.
So set your ego aside to save money on taxes. Is that what we're also, call yourself an administrator. You don't have to be the CEO.
That's right. Yeah. It depends on how much money you want to pay for your ego. Absolutely.
Yeah. No, it all makes sense. Well, cool. Any other use cases of the product that you've seen people using it for, or any cool stories?
Yeah, so we do have reports for C-Corps as well. C-Corps have become a little bit more popular since the Tax Cut and Jobs Act has passed. And so there's some great tax planning opportunities in there with some of your clients, maybe talking with them about C-Corps. We also have what we call a normalization report. You brought up valuation a little bit earlier. Normalizing owners' compensation as part of a valuation is a part of every single valuation. So we have those reports in there as well, but we are definitely known for our S-Corp report.
Does it do a comparison C to S? Is that what the C-Corp one is?
No, it's a report that will give you basically that same backup to have for a file for a C-Corp as you would for an S-Corp. We do not have an analysis for going to a C-Corp. That planning becomes quite a bit more technical. And I think people would be better served by other tax planning softwares that are out there when they're looking at that analysis.
Could be a feature request. It could be a request. I could see that, you know, an LLC, a single member LLC or Schedule C versus S Corp versus C Corp. I could see that in the future. That could be useful.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that would be dope. How do people find this? How do they sign up? What is the, is it monthly? Do you just pay a license fee? How does it work?
Yeah, it's a license fee. It's annual. If you'd like to learn more, rcreports.com is a great place to start. Then I highly recommend you jump on like a 30-minute one-on-one demo. Our demo team is spectacular, and they'll give you a run through of the software in a real short time frame, and you can decide for yourself if it makes sense to add it to your tech stack or not.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's being added to our tech stack. We're trying to remove things from our tech stack and consolidate. Is that also like in the future for you guys being an add-on, like with this tool uses RCR reports and it's sort of like embedded in it? Are there any further implications that might happen?
Absolutely. You'll likely start to see those types of integrations coming online next year.
Oh, dope. Okay. So you could be using Tally 4, let's say, and then potentially you have a little pop-up, check out the RCR reports, or you can be in ADP, and ADP has Biz Equity already. They may have something like this, which would be very useful if Augusto or an ADP picked up something like this. That would be dope.
Absolutely.
Where do you get your data? You said you have a proprietary or you have a very wide database. Where do you get this data?
That's probably a half hour all in itself, but I will give you the 60-second or 30-second version of that. Sure. So we have a team that's all they do is create our data sets. And so they start with credible surveys that are out there. So there's a lot of wage data out there that is not credible. And that's generally where people find themselves in trouble in court with the IRS. They take that data, and then that's kind of our proprietary process. They take that data and they turn it into usable data. It's just numbers in surveys. Our team gets a hold of it and turns it into data that is verifiable into a 90 to 95% confidence range.
Interesting. So are they pulling it locally too, or is this, I guess this is a whole half hour that we would have to look into just that data?
Yeah, so we run a couple of different data sets. So we have what we call a cross-industry data set that's typically used for the cost approach, which is most S-Corps. And that's those numbers are local, state, and national. And then we run an industry-specific data set. That this data set isn't as robust because that data is much, much harder to find in reliable quantities. But that data sets used for what we call our market approach or industry comparison approach.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Well, Paul, appreciate you coming on. Thanks for joining us in this little tech time at Accounting High. And if you are interested in learning, rcrreports.com.
Got it.
You got the .com. All right, homies. Class dismissed.
While you're here, don't forget to follow us on Spotify or subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you may be listening to us right now so you don't miss out on any new episodes. Share this episode on social media, tagging us at Accounting High. And feel free to leave us a 5-star review letting us know how the school year is treating you.